Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So, the left wants to turn the 40-year-old virgin into the human stain.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Brett Kavanaugh and his wife sitting down yesterday evening and taking my advice, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. When I heard that they were going to break their silence and sit down with Martha, I said, Dan was probably the PR working his magic.
No, I just suggested yesterday on the show that he should not withstand 4 days of being beaten up in a back alley by the D.C. press corps without responding. I mean, yes, he'll have his day before the Senate Judiciary Committee, but he needs more than written statements to respond as the second accuser comes forward and the hysteria is fed. And that's what he and his wife Ashley did with Martha McCallum yesterday. And this was a familiar refrain from Brett Kavanaugh, how he opened the interview, which is all he wants is a fair process and the opportunity to be heard.
I am looking for a fair process, a process where I can defend my integrity and clear my name. And all I'm asking for is fairness and that I be heard in this process.
Speaking of the process, his wife Ashley had this characterization of the process thus far.
This process is incredibly difficult, harder than we imagined. And we imagined it might be hard. But at the end of the day, our faith is strong, and we know that we're on the right path. We're just going to stick to it.
So the question is, do you believe Brett Kavanaugh, did he enhance his credibility with yesterday's interview with Martha McCallum? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
What I found fascinating was I thought Martha was pretty hard on them. I mean, she wasn't, this was not a softball interview by any means, because she kept pressing on, well, did you know her? Just, you know, is she a familiar face? And he said, no, we didn't hang out with, you know, we hung out in different circles in high school. But the party in question, he said he was not at. And he gave a location, you know, the cross streets of where this party was. And he said, it's not possible.
No, I've never sexually assaulted anyone, not in high school, not ever. I've always treated women with dignity and respect. Listen to the people who've known me best through my whole life. The women who've known me since high school, the 65 who overnight signed a letter from high school saying I always treated them with dignity and respect.
But with regard to Christine Ford, do you know her?
I may have met her. We did not travel in the same social circles. She was not a friend, not someone I knew.
You don't remember ever being at parties with her, ever?
I do not. And this is an allegation about a party in the summer of 1982 at a house near Connecticut Avenue and East West Highway with five people present. I was never at any such party. The other people who are alleged to be present have said they do not remember any such party. A woman who was present, another woman who was present, who is Dr. Ford's lifelong friend,
Leland,
has said she doesn't know me and never remembers being at a party with me at any time in her life. All I'm asking for is a fair process where I can be heard.
And it was interesting. Martha McCallum also put the question to Ashley, his wife. So throughout this, when the allegations were made, and even the second allegation, the second accuser, Deborah Ramirez, more recently over the weekend, did you ever doubt Brett? Did doubt ever creep into your mind, like, you know,
like, not, who did I marry?
Like, maybe I marry a sociopath. Maybe he's Mr. Nice Guy to me. And
maybe he's a double life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it has happened.
Maybe he's Tony Preckwinkling me.
It seems.
Oh, sorry.
It seems unlikely in this case, but that was the question that was posed.
I mean, I know Brad. I've known him for 17 years, and this is not at all character. It's really hard to believe. He's decent. He's kind. He's good. I know his heart. This is not consistent with Brad.
Do you really know Brad?
Do you really? And I thought he showed some compassion, you know, for, you know, because everybody's like, what's his pain going to be, you know, in the Senate judiciary hearings? Is he going to feel for the victim? And he did say it is, you know, a possibility that something did happen to this woman, but he didn't do it.
I am not questioning and have not questioned that perhaps Dr. Ford at some point in her life was sexually assaulted by someone in some place. But what I know is I've never sexually assaulted anyone in high school or at any time.
So when she says there's no doubt in her mind that it was you, because she was asked that, is it possible that you maybe confused him, maybe it's mistaken identity, maybe it was someone else, she said absolutely not.
I've never sexually assaulted anyone. I was not at the party described. I was not anywhere at any place resembling that in the summer of 1982. The other people alleged to be there don't say anything like that. And the woman who's alleged to be there, who's her friend, says that she doesn't know me and doesn't recall ever being at a party with me in her life.
So I saw some criticism of Kavanaugh sounding like he was too rehearsed, that he had prepared too much for this. Let me tell you something. What he did was smart. Mm-hmm. It's not rehearsed. It's intelligent.
Yep.
No matter who McCallum brought up, he did not go to questioning their motives. Why is this happening? Why is somebody doing this? I don't know. Here's what I know. Very judicial. I know these facts. I know that I'm telling the truth. What somebody's motivation is, I have no idea. I'm not going to comment on it. I'm just going to comment on behavior. I'm going to comment on conduct. So I know what the truth is as I'm explaining it. I know what people have done, these women who've signed a letter, these women who held a press conference, these women and others who know me.
Yeah, a total of 220.
The witnesses that were proffered as corroborators who have turned out to refute or not remember the allegations of both accusers. So I'm just going to stick to the four corners of what we know based on how people have behaved. And that's smart. It's not rehearsed. So for him to repeat multiple times through this 15-minute interview that all I'm looking for is a fair process and a opportunity to be heard. Yeah, because that's what he wants the takeaway to be. That's what he wants the headline to be, because I think that's what he wants. And there's nothing wrong with being focused and disciplined and restrained. That's called being an adult. So for people criticizing him, and I've seen some even from the conservative.
Conservatives too?
That you know, he sounded rehearsed. For all of the reasons I just laid out, right. I wouldn't say rehearsed. I'd say restrained and focused. And he should be in this situation.
Is this a preview for what we're going to see on Thursday? I mean, are we going to hear fair process, you know, 20 times?
He's not going to see fair process, I mean, because
he's part of the process has started.
Well, right. That's his opportunity to be heard. So all I've asked is this opportunity. Thank you for this opportunity. And I assume it'll be some version of what you heard there with repeating what he knows to be true, repeating his blanket denials, and, of course, telling us the intimate details of when he lost his virginity.
Yeah. Hey-o.
Well, I can't wait for that.
I kept singing the song, Like a Virgin. Hey!
It got a little...
I got a little uncomfortable, I'll say. It just, I didn't expect it to go there.
This is the new standard. We've got Eric Metaxas on later in the show, I'll be asking him when he lost his virginity. Brett Kavanaugh saying never had any sexual conduct of any sort. Sexual congress. Never consummated.
I did not have sexual intercourse or anything close to sexual intercourse in high school or for many years thereafter. And the girls from the schools I went to and I were
so
friends.
So you're saying that all through all these years that are in question, you were a virgin?
That's correct.
Never had sexual intercourse with anyone in high school?
Correct.
And through what years in college, since we're probing into your personal
many
life
years,
here?
Many years after. I'll leave it at that. Many years after.
How many years?
So I was the follow-up. So who was your first? I mean, really, that's what I was bracing for.
I was
waiting. I'm so glad the question was not asked.
I was waiting for Martha McKellen to ask him if he still had his Oscar Goldman action figure in the original packaging. I mean, it's so weird. This is where we're at. And
well, I know, because this whole thing is about sex, and so he had to clear his name and just talk about the truth.
Well, it's not about sex.
It's about a smear campaign, but using the SEX word.
Yes, that's what it's about. It's a smear campaign, and I thought this was the most poignant moment of the interview when he
talked about girls' basketball.
No, when he repeated again his denial of what he is alleged to have done, and he did make one qualitative statement about what's happening when he said this is wrong.
And I know I'm telling the truth. I know my lifelong record, and I'm not going to let false accusations drive me out of this process. I have faith in God, and I have faith in the fairness of the American people. America's about fairness and hearing from both sides. And I didn't do this or anything resembling this. This is wrong.
He almost got a little emotional there, but I would agree with him that this is wrong. I would go further. I think this is grotesque. And I thought Kavanaugh vastly improved his standing in the public mind yesterday with that interview. But we'll take your calls. 312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, Turnkey.pro text line. If you agree with me, if you disagree with me, if you want to share stories about when you lost your virginity. Robert in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. I agree with you 100%, Dan. But what scares the living bejeejies out of me is, why would anyone try and go up against the Democratic machine? Because in the Republican world, we're a bunch of little babies. We don't fight the same fight they fight. And we might sling a little bit of mud. They sling like Mount St. Helens. And it really should scare us all to death that this is the norm now. It's been the norm in Chicago for a long time if you've lived here your whole life, like I have.
Yeah, politics and beanbag. Thanks for the call, Robert. Appreciate it. Dan and Amy coming to you live from Judson University in scenic Elgin, Illinois.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, talking about Kavanaugh's interview with McCallum yesterday. And, I mean, some of the responses. I just got a tweet from a friend of mine, Democrat. But I'll lay 10-1 odds that Mr. Kavanaugh was no longer a virgin by age 20. No pun intended. I don't even know what to say to that. What does that even mean? 20? Why is it not 18? Why is it not 24? Why is it not 22?
He said it was years after college.
You want to get? I know, but
still. He's the over under on this.
He's lying. You want to guess it? How are we going to prove up this bet? I mean, this is the rabbit hole. These are the rabbit holes, plural, that the left wants you to go down. Just like they pulled some conservatives into the rabbit hole, criticizing Dennis Prager for saying even if Avenatti had done what Blasé Ford accused him of, it's not disqualifying for the Supreme Court, which is a topic we've tackled as well. I'll tell you who else is standing by Kavanaugh all the way. It's President Trump. He had this to say yesterday in advance of the McCallum interview.
He's a fine man with an unblemished past. These are highly unsubstantiated statements from people represented by lawyers. You should look into the lawyers doing the representation. Judge Kavanaugh is an outstanding person, and I am with him all the way. We'll see how it goes with the Senate. We'll see how it goes with the vote. I think it could be, there's a chance that this could be, one of the single most unfair, unjust things to happen to a candidate for anything. But I am with Judge Kavanaugh, and I look forward to a vote. And for people to come out of the woodwork from 36 years ago and 30 years ago and never mentioned it, all of a sudden it happens.
In my opinion, it's totally political. It is totally political.
Well, a room full of Senate Democrats can help jog your memory, I suppose.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're coming to you live from Judson University in scenic Elgin, or Elgin.
Elgin, who calls it Elgin?
I think some local TV news reader called it Elgin. One of the people they've just imported from, I don't know. One of the
Zanesville, Ohio?
Yeah, one of the.
Market size 189.
Some Mac school or one of the Seven Sisters or something. I don't know. But here's the thing. Topics of today include virginity, binge drinking, boofing, and gang rape. So I don't know if we picked the best day to broadcast from a Christian university.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Grab a line, 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, then a quick comment.
Later in the show, at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour, we'll have the university president, Gene Krum, on. We'll go in-depth into the topic of boofing. With him.
Stop.
Get his perspectives on that.
Dan.
So yesterday, before his interview with Martha McCallum, Brett Kavanaugh sent a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee, sort of a preview, really, of the interview. This is perhaps even more strident. At least it comes across as more strident in written word than sort of the soft-spoken Kavanaugh. He writes about the allegations that came out against him in the 11th hour. These are smears, pure and simple, and they debase our public discourse. But they're also a threat to any man or woman who wishes to serve the country. Such grotesque and obvious character assassination, if allowed to succeed, will dissuade competent and good people of all political persuasions from service. He goes on to say, I will not be intimidated into withdrawing from this process. The vile threats of violence against my family will not drive me out. The last minute character assassination will not succeed. And he looks forward to answering questions from the Senate on Thursday. So he may be mild-mannered, but he seems fairly stout of heart and stiff of spine. And I hope Republican senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee and in the Senate generally are similarly disposed. I'll tell you one who is, and you know that he generates a lot of criticism, much of it deserved, but Mitch McConnell took the Senate floor yesterday.
Yeah, I watched it live, and I was trying to not watch it because I had things to do, but I kept going back to it. He's a huge supporter of Kavanaugh, and he's not backing down.
No.
And that message needed to be heard yesterday, too, as well as hearing from Brett and his wife, Ashley.
And the Senate Majority Leader went beyond not backing down to actually going on offense against Democrats. What a concept. He should try to do it more often. So should his colleagues.
Well, it's not like they didn't warn us. But even by the far left standards, this shameful, shameful smear campaign has hit a new low. Senate Democrats and their allies are trying to destroy a man's personal and professional life on the basis of decades-old allegations that are unsubstantiated and uncorroborated. That, Mr. President, is where we are. This is what the so-called resistance has become. A smear campaign, pure and simple, aided and abetted by members of the United States Senate.
And Chuck Grassley, the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, he sent a letter yesterday to Ms.
Blasey Ford, who, by the way,
it's Blasey Ford, like Rosé.
Blasey
Ford. Feeling blasé about blasé. Blasey Ford saying, I'm writing to say that I'm committed to fair and respectful treatment of you, as you've requested. I work to make certain the committee I chair handles all individuals involved in hearings in that manner, and you deserve the same. I have great responsibility for the hearing to consider the president's nominee. I should have been given your July 30th letter at the time your letter was sent by either my colleague, Senator Feinstein, or the lawyer helping you, so that what it said could have been considered in August and during the week of September 4th when the committee hearing was held, including a senator's only session of the hearing. I take letters from individuals seriously and over a long period of time have demonstrated a commitment to handling personal or sensitive information in a confidential matter. So Grassley sort of chiding his Senate Democrat colleagues through that letter to Ford, saying, I'm going to treat you with respect, but understand we don't have to be in this place. You and your allies put us in this place.
Right. And you chose to make you chose to do what you wanted to do. And I honestly am deep down in my soul, I still think that there's a very strong possibility that Thursday's hearing is not going to happen. Because now she says she has a fear of flying. But if you look at her past, I mean, she lived in Hawaii for a year, so she didn't take a boat to Hawaii. She has flown before. Her relatives are on the East Coast, and she has been to visit them several times via a plane. So I don't know if this is a stall tactic, but I still think there's time that she'll back out.
Well, and there's also, they've got these demands that haven't been met that could provide a convenient cover to not participate. We'll see.
A one-camera shoot. I mean, I honestly, just as somebody who used to be in the business, that demand, I mean, who the hell does she think she is? That she's, and she wants, what, a green room, too, with that? I mean, Anita Hill did it. She sat there. She showed up when she was supposed to show up, and she testified like everybody else with the amount of cameras that were there.
Well, this is what Mitch McConnell's referring to when he talks about the Dems' conduct.
But Democrats wouldn't let a few inconvenient things, like a complete lack of evidence or an accuser's request for confidentiality, to get between them and a good smear. It's despicable. And the contrast with the completely professional conduct of Chairman Grassley could not be starker.
Now, McConnell also tackled straight away the second allegation, the second accuser, Deborah Ramirez.
But the smear campaign didn't stop there. That was just Act One. Just Act One. According to the reporter of this second allegation, the accuser, quote, came forward because Senate Democrats began looking, and now they're calling for even further delays and further obstruction over a second decades-old allegation that is so thin and so unsupported that the New York Times refused to even run a story about it.
That was a point that Kavanaugh made in his interview with McCallum as well. Glenn in Holland, Michigan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes. How come we can't take and say, all right, fine, we're going to have these hearings, but then we're going to continue on this investigation, and if we find out that these people were lying, these women were lying, and this is nothing more than just a smear campaign, then we're going to press charges against these women, and we're going to press charges for these false allegations, and we're going to throw the book at them. I think they would change their mind drastically about how far they're going to pursue smearing Kavanaugh.
Well, I think their attorneys know that they cannot perjure themselves.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, but it's interesting to know. Thanks for the call, Glenn. It's interesting to note that one of the demands from
Blase
Ford's attorney, Katz, was to that she would not testify under oath.
Oh, really?
It's one of the demands.
How convenient. Oh, my gosh.
Sarah in Glenview, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I also have a fear of flying. Ha, ha, ha. Anyway, my point is, instead of a he said, she said, I'd like to know, and a lot of people in America would like to know, behind the scenes, has money changed hands, or will it? We all know that there's Soros money involved here, and there seems to be a Congo line of females lining up to come forward.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Sarah. Appreciate it. I mean, the Congo line, I assume she's referring to these reports out yesterday of possible third and fourth accusers. And let me tell you how slimy the D.C. press corps is. You think, just understand that they are part of the smear campaign against Kavanaugh.
Right.
The report in the Daily Beast, third and fourth accusers. That was the headline. When, in point of fact, the alleged third accuser is somebody that Stormy Daniels' primordial attorney has identified.
Right.
Yet to come forward.
And he said today or tomorrow that he said there's significant evidence of multiple house parties in Washington, D.C. in the 1980s, and that during which Brett Kavanaugh and his friend Mark Judge and others would participate in the targeting of women with alcohol and drugs in order to allow a train of men to gang rape them. I mean, come on, he should be disbarred. Is that a possibility? Because this, I mean, he is so self-serving and reckless, and he just wants to keep inserting himself into everything, every headline that's going on in our culture.
There's sick. So this is the Daily Beast report, and then there's actually a look, or there was a another newspaper person at the Sentinel, who suggested there was somebody from Maryland that was going to make an accusation. This is the fourth. And then Washington Examiner called the local law enforcement. So we know what you're talking about. Maryland police, the relevant local police, aren't reviewing any second high school allegation against Brett Kavanaugh. But, I mean, the way they report it as, like, these allegations have been made, these are rumors about allegations that have been denied by one local law enforcement agency and are the other being promulgated by Stormy Daniels' fracking attorney.
Oh, he's such a goofball. I mean, it's the land of misfit toys. Back to Deborah Ramirez, though. We know that she spent 6 days with her attorney, and CNN was reporting that Senate Democrats were in on those meetings because they were trying to. She called her roommate. She called her best friend. Like, it could have been him. I don't know. And so the Senate Democrats are in on the smear campaign, and it was a great parallel to what happened to Clarence Thomas. And I'll never forget this.
I think that this today is a travesty. I think that it is disgusting. I think that this hearing should never occur in America. This is a case in which this sleaze, this dirt, was searched for by staffers of members of this committee, and this body validated it and displayed it at prime time over our entire nation.
Yeah, high-tech lynching for uppity black people. I mean, that's what that was. By the way, Jeffrey Toobin embarrassed himself on CNN. That's not new. Suggesting that history has vindicated Anita Hill. Quite the opposite. Anita Hill wasn't vindicated at that hearing, and she hasn't been vindicated since because the facts haven't changed, and her inconsistent testimony to FBI versus to the Senate Judiciary Committee hasn't changed. Mr. Toobin. So I hope there is a sort of a Kavanaugh, a Thomas moment for Kavanaugh on Thursday.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you think he should have a Clarence Thomas moment where he pretty much repeats exactly what he said?
Well,
back in 1991.
I mean, this is redux in a whole host of ways. This even worse, though. These were colleagues, adults. We're talking about 36 years ago, teenagers, and arguing about what the culture was like at Georgetown Prep in the 80s, for goodness sakes. Lucy in Lowell, Indiana.
Yes, good morning. This is about money, and it's about abortion. This woman who's accusing Kavanaugh, according to InfoWars, works for a drug company which makes a drug, and it's actually licensed for one type of use, but the second use that it's used for is like a morning after pill.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that. Thanks for the call, Lucy.
What's going on?
Well, so the idea is that she has we know that these are both Democrats, and that doesn't necessarily obviate their claims, but that Blasey Ford has an interest to work for a pharma company that produces abortifacients. And so she may be even more motivated because of the Roe v. Wade issue than Democrat senators, possibly. We just need to be careful here, too. Let's be meticulous about what we know to be true. I saw a bunch of stuff yesterday about Deborah Ramirez being a former George Soros open land fellow.
Not true.
Different Deborah Ramirez. So let's just do what Brett Kavanaugh did in his interview with Kavanaugh. Let's stick to what we know to be true and ask questions about what we don't. Dan and Amy, coming to you live from Judson University in Elgin.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're coming to you live this morning from Judson University, a small, private, Christian liberal arts college in Elgin, of course, Judson University. And we're going to be talking to our friend Eric Metaxas, who's in town to speak at Judson today. We'll be talking to him.
You know, they have an opening here for a basketball coach.
At the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. Grad assistant.
A grad assistant, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's never too late.
Yeah, maybe.
After the show, I'm trying out for the volleyball team. I want to be their new middle hitter.
It'd be a lot more fun than Illinois politics, I'll tell you that. and speaking of which, we're going to take a break from Brett Kavanaugh's yearbooks just to talk a little bit of local issues. And Truth in Accounting, truthinaccounting.org, statedatalab.org, has a new report out on Illinois' financial standing. And it turns out, in the parlance of the Kavanaugh saga, that the state of Illinois is a big debt whore. We'll do anything to pile up debt.
Oh, really?
You spend it, spread it everywhere.
We won.
Or speaking in Judson University parlance, Illinois is failing. The grade that Truth in Accounting assigns to the state of Illinois in terms of its financial health, that'd be an F. For more on why that might be, we're pleased to be joined by Sheila Weinberg, the founder of Truth in Accounting. Sheila, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Well, now we got her, I think.
Sheila?
Yes.
Hello. Oh, there we go. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
Here I am. So, I'm here.
Good. Explain to us, if you will, why Illinois gets an F, as if we don't know.
Illinois has a taxpayer burden. That's how much each taxpayer would have to send down to Springfield to clean up all of our financial mess that they've created. And that taxpayer burden is $50,800. And we give states that have more than $20,000 an F. So Illinois
per person.
Now the good news is
that number is per person, right?
It's actually per taxpayer.
Per taxpayer, okay.
Yeah. So it's about per household. So, the good news is that we're no longer the second worst state. We're actually the third worst state. Connecticut took that honor of the second worst. But it's not because Illinois got better. It's because Connecticut got worse.
Mm-hmm. And New Jersey is dead last. What about the best states, financially
well, we
most
some,
sound
we
state?
We do have states that are actually ahead of the game. Alaska is our absolute best state, and followed by North Dakota, Wyoming, Utah, and South Dakota. So if you're looking for places to move to, those sound like a pretty exciting states financially.
Yeah, that's why Kirk Heinrich moved to Sioux Falls, I understand. The Midwest, how does Illinois stack up as it relates to our Midwestern neighbors?
Well, right before I went on, I went ahead to our state data lab and did a create your own chart. It's an exciting feature that we allow you to do. And I looked at Illinois compared to Indiana, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And our taxpayer burden is by far the highest. The next closest taxpayer burden would be Michigan with a taxpayer burden of $16,600. And then Wisconsin is only $3,900 and Indiana is $2,700.
$3,900 versus $50,000 here. And the thing, too, that's so interesting to me about these numbers is what you hear from people if you propose, say, to change the way we do property taxation in Illinois, do like a 1% hard cap like Indiana has. Or to do something else that another state has done and found success and financial stability. Well, if you do that, then where are you going to find? It's always like, where are you going to find more money to prop up the status quo? That's the response you get, even from some erstwhile conservatives, about the structural reforms that are needed to reimagine a state that has $244 billion in unfunded liabilities and unpaid bills and debt. And I mean, it's just the psychosis involved here. Where are you going to find the money? Indiana, Wisconsin, you just mentioned, $2,500, $3,500. per taxpayer, Illinois, 50 grand. Indiana and Wisconsin have schools and police forces and fire departments and local units of government and quality universities. They have all the things that we have, but not the unfunded obligations, the debt load, the usurious taxation. And just getting people out of that mindset of we can't change anything because where would we get the money? We have to change anything because there is no amount of money we can get to make this system soluble.
No, and we, you know, we found that the, you know, while the pension debt did go down a little bit last year because of the good, you know, pension assets in, the good markets, the unfunded retiree health care went up by $8 billion, and the state reported a $9 billion deficit. So these numbers are huge and just continue to get worse. Those other states that I mentioned, their taxpayer burden actually went up, went down last year. So Illinois continues to get worse while they continue to get better.
And just to give an order of magnitude here, you quantify the state's total assets at $80 billion, right? $80 billion, round numbers. The unfunded pension liabilities, which went down a little bit last year, $135 billion.
Oh my God!
So I mean,
where does this like the money fairy just comes?
If
we
liquid,
we don't have funds to pay our bills.
If we liquidated everything, we could only get halfway there. It's absurd the numbers that we're talking about, the hole that we've dug, and I just don't think people are so keen to confront it, or they can't rebalance.
And what happens is that people get more and more cynical, you know, and trust the government less as these numbers increase. And And therefore, you know, in order to get change, you need to trust the change agents. Well, obviously in Illinois, we do not trust the legislator and the governors to fix this. They just continually make it worse and worse and worse.
Well, when did things get bad? Like, when did people realize, uh-oh, this isn't going well?
Well, we have been highlighting
they?
for decades that, you know, the state has been, quote, theoretically meeting its balanced budget requirement while it's been going into debt. But for decades, citizens were told, everything is fine. We're meeting that balanced budget requirement. And, you know, things have just gotten, you know, as the governments were promising more and more of these promises of pensions and retiree health care without funding them, but claiming a balanced budget, things got worse while people weren't paying attention.
She is Sheila Weinberg. She's the founder of Truth in Accounting, truthinaccounting.org. Check out the reports they've done on all the states to look at what's happening in Illinois versus what's happening in a state you're going to move to.
Right. Pick out a state you want to move to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, go to our state data lab. You can compare states on 340 data points and then figure out what state to move to.
Statedatalab.org is that website. Sheila Weinberg, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Dan and Amy.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, coming to you live from Judson University in Elgin this morning. And
this place is pretty cool.
No,
I feel like we're in a ski lodge down here.
A small liberal arts college is a good way to go, actually. I mean, Northwestern was small. It was like 7,500 students. But going even smaller to a liberal arts college, especially one that is rooted in Christianity, might have been a better call for you, especially.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah. Appreciate that.
I want to get Ted Cruz in D.C. getting accosted by the professional protesters. But
Where did they find him? What did they do?
Well, before we get to that, I mean, it's so rare that we get anybody who actually is tuned in to Illinois state finances, has a comment, is paying attention, wants to do something about it. I feel obligated to take this call from Scott in Aurora. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, I just wanted to mention that when I looked at the electoral map, you know, for the last presidential election, the states that were blue, like early on in the night, are the ones that are all democratically run. And maybe this isn't something I should be paying attention to, but I just noticed that. And these are all the states that are the deepest in debt. And I was just curious if that's even something I should even be paying attention to, or is that just, you know, across the board how these states are run?
No, it's a great point you bring up. Thanks for the call, Scott. You absolutely should look at the Venn diagram between the worst governed states and how and who's in control of them. The blue model, the Chicago way model of governance, is a catastrophe. A catastrophe, unmitigated. Then we scaled it statewide in Illinois, and then we exported to D.C. for 8 years, you may remember. Catastrophe. It doesn't work. It doesn't work at exorbitant prices. And if you look at the most populous urban centers, I think the most populous city that's got a Republican mayor, San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're talking about the top 50 cities, Democrat run, and look at their finances. But you absolutely should compare state to state. What's happened over the last two decades in Illinois as compared to Mitch Daniels' revolution in Indiana and Scott Walker's in Wisconsin and Republicans and Rick Snyder in Michigan, how they sort of clawed Michigan's way back into economic stability. Obviously, Iowa has been relatively well-governed for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And had the longest-serving Republican governor, longest-serving governor in the history of America in Branstad.
Yeah, they're number 15 right now.
Missouri. I mean, what Bevin is doing in Kentucky versus what is happening in these fortress states like California and Illinois and New York and New Jersey. Absolutely, you should look at that and take instruction away from it. All right, so turning to Ted Cruz. Ted and Heidi went out for dinner in D.C.
Oh, that's nice. A little date night, huh?
Yeah, take a little break from having to deal with that snot-nosed kid who's a year younger than him that he's running against, Beto O'Rourke. And this is the era, remember, in the infamous words of No Justice, No Peace, Maxine, wherever you find a Republican, in public or anywhere else, make sure to accost him. And these professional protesters did so to Ted and his wife at this D.C. restaurant.
We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors. We believe survivors.
Excuse me.
Beto is way hotter than you do. We believe survivors.
Beto's.
Oh, he's hot.
God bless you. We believe survivors.
God bless you.
Excuse me. Let my wife
go. We believe survivors.
He's forgotten you.
We believe survivors. We believe survivors.
And that's when I changed that. So they kick the Cruises out, or did they kick the protesters out?
No, Ted and Heidi left, and then after Ted and Heidi left, and it was safe for the maitre d' to intervene.
For women's rights, for rights of every marginalized community.
Yeah, Mark. I don't believe a baby was actually with them. I think that's our drop, but. Yeah, so this was so then they intervened and said, "Oh, you have to leave now that you've screamed at two of our patrons for the last minute and disrupted everybody else's dinner. Now we're going to ask you to leave."
Why don't they just arrest them?
Or, you know, stick them in the neck with a salad fork?
Yeah, that would be an option.
It's just interesting the we believe survivors and this hysteria and these guys that are with this woman chanting, "We believe survivors. We believe survivors." That's
where they have man buns.
This is the lobotomized left. All they have to offer is hate. And by the way, they tweeted about this too to congratulate themselves.
Patting themselves on the back.
Yeah, a fascist not welcome! !
Oh my gosh!
# cancel Kavanaugh. I mean, I'm sorry. Again, who are the totalitarians? Who are the silencers in this discussion? Who are the people that are promoting intolerance and hate as the lead? This is consistent with the piece I referenced yesterday, which if you haven't read, you got to read this.
Which one?
Shelby Steele's piece in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, Why the Left is Consumed with Hate. He explains it, you know, with some historical perspective. Hate is a license. And even those on the left use it to prevent from being cannibalized by their own, or they attempt to. But here's an example of what he's talking about. Shelby Steele writing, white on black shootings evoke America's history of racism and so carry an iconic payload of menace. Black on black shootings carry no such payload, although they are truly menacing to the black community. They evoke only despair. The left gets power from fighting white evil, not black despair. The whole issue in this Kavanaugh confirmation fight has nothing to do with the truth. Do you think that these people care whether Kavanaugh assaulted his two accusers or not? They don't care what the truth is. This is useful as a cudgel in advance of them ascending to be shepherds. And as Thomas Sowell says, the left wants to be our shepherds, which would require us to be their sheep. That's what they demand. And these lobotomized leftists who can only chant and don't have another thought going on in their head except their visceral hatred of anybody not on their side are a prime example of what Shelby Steele writes about in the Wall Street Journal.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, coming to you live from Judson University in Elgin, Illinois.
Woo!
And
this place is fun. I want to go back to school.
Yeah. You should. You
Does
should
that sound creepy?
You should try going to an actual college. They're accredited and everything. I'm like,
hey-o. Yeah, thank you.
You know, by the way, it's not just Kavanaugh and Blase Ford that have a date on Thursday that's of importance to their professional career. That's
right.
Weasley Rod Rosenstein does as well.
Yeah, they're going to have a meeting at the White House. Mm-hmm. Trump announced that yesterday. And Rod Rosenstein went to the White House yesterday, met with John Kelly. Everybody thought he was going to get fired or hand in his resignation. And
There was a statement prepared for his resignation.
And that didn't happen. So I don't know if Trump's going to keep him. Should Trump keep him? 312-642-5600, the turnkey DepPro answer line. 64636, type in DA. Then a quick comment. I think he should wait until after the midterms.
Oh, I think you
don't
keep...
give any fuel to the fire.
No, sure. Like the fire needs fuel. I think I think you keep him for the comic relief. I mean, he is a funny, funny guy. I like a prankster as my number two at Justice.
Hey, you know what? I got an idea. Let me wire you up, and then you can go into Marcus's office and try to get him on something, and we'll just see how it goes.
I don't need.
See, if you did that, you would be fired. But Rod Rosenstein was, you know, hypothetically considering that. Maybe it was a joke. Maybe it wasn't. And he still has a job.
It's a good thing the 25th Amendment does not apply to a program
directors.
Yeah, exactly. If Rosenstein does eventually go, and there's a great hope that he will, I don't know. I mean, after this escapade where at least Lisa Page believed that he was serious about having somebody wired up to try and get essentially incriminating evidence on the President of the United States to help foster a 25th Amendment action to remove him from office. I mean, it's a remarkable story. The New York Times.
Yeah, and it's so detailed that he was trying to reach out to one of the cabinet members to do it.
But the New York Times anonymous sources, Rosenstein refutes it, but it's sort of a Weasley refutation. If you read Andy McCarthy's piece in National Review Online, he goes through some of the details there of his sort of generic refutation. And it's always interesting when you may come in and make a blanket wave off, but you don't address the specifics. So it's sort of what Rosenstein did, which is why it's not surprising that he was preparing to be fired or to have his resignation requested. Didn't happen. You know who would follow Rosenstein as the number two at Justice and oversee Mueller?
Who?
This could be a sea change in the investigation. This guy, Noel Francisco, not to be confused with comedian Pablo Francisco. That's Pablo Francisco. He's
what
a stand-up comedian.
That?
Noel Francisco is a former law clerk for Antonin Scalia.
Oh.
That's Pablo Francisco. Noel Francisco, the law clerk. You just want to keep him straight for those of you who follow stand-up comedians. And obviously Rod Rosenstein does.
Yeah, because he's a funny guy.
He's a cut-up. I mean, ultimate prankster.
Right, he looks like a weasel, doesn't he?
So it'll be good to see... Rod Rosenstein exit stage left, probably immediately get some contract work with Fusion GPS.
Right. You know what? Why don't you write a book? Because everybody else is, and they hope to make millions of dollars by doing that.
You want to write a book? Go ahead, write a book. I mean, this idea like, oh, let's keep your enemies close because otherwise you put them on the book tour with Andy McCabe. Go ahead on the book tour. I don't care. You can't have cancers in your administration at the highest levels.
Right. Because clearly he's biased and he wants to bring down his boss, whether he's joking or not. Every little joke that people say, oh, I'm just joking, there's a bit of seriousness behind that.
The story compromises him, and frankly, his management of Mueller compromises him in belief in his integrity and fair-mindedness. And it's time to make changes that, oh, by the way, are well within the president's executive power. The idea that the president cannot nominate and terminate executive branch officials at his leisure is absurd. It is advanced by people who are political hacks flacking for the left or completely ignorant of the Constitution. And by the way, Noel Francisco, again, not this guy. That's Pablo Francisco. Noel Francisco.
I'm going to look up this Pablo Francisco.
Noel Francisco actually has opined on the topic of executive authority. So, I mean, just to understand how important this decision about Rosenstein or Rosenstein's decision to leave and form a law firm with Page and Strzok, how important that is for the Mueller investigation that obviously will extend beyond the midterms. Dan and Amy, coming to you live from Judson University in Elgin.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Brett Kavanaugh's interview with Martha McCallum, as well as his wife Ashley, interviewed by McCallum yesterday night. And here's what Brett Kavanaugh said in terms of a blanket statement on the topic.
And I know I'm telling the truth. I know my lifelong record. And I'm not going to let false accusations drive me out of this process. I have faith in God, and I have faith in the fairness of the American people. America's about fairness and hearing from both sides. And I didn't do this or anything resembling this. This is wrong.
This is wrong. To help us interpret the postings in Brett Kavanaugh's high school yearbooks and other matters on topic, we're pleased to be joined by Howard Kurtz. He's the host of Media Buzz on Fox News Channel, also the author of the book Media Madness, Donald Trump, the Press, and the War Over the Truth. Howard, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. The media madness that I write about in the book has gone to full insanity, hasn't it?
Well, let's talk specifics. So what did you think of the decision by the New Yorker to run the Ronan Farrow piece about the second accuser, particularly when even the New York Times wouldn't bite on it?
Right. In fact, the New York Times spent at least a week talking to several dozen ex-classmates of Judge Kavanaugh. Couldn't come up with any corroboration. Look, I just didn't think it was up to Ronan Farrow's standards. I mean, I have applauded the work he's done on Harvey Weinstein and Les Moonves, but, you know, this story, obviously, under extreme time pressure, had the allegation from this woman, could not find anybody who was there, although this was a party is supposedly attended by a lot of people. What really undercut the story is in the first few paragraphs, which is she at first wasn't sure. She had gaps in her memory. She had to struggle to remember, and she consulted with her lawyer. And then she felt confident enough to say, yeah, Brett Kavanaugh did this terrible thing to me.
Now, during that time, that 6 days that she spent with her lawyer and, you know, jogging through her memory, is it true that some Senate Democrats were also speaking to her, trying to convince her to come forward?
It is true that at least one intermediary, I believe a civil rights lawyer, went to the Dems on the Senate Judiciary Committee and told them about this case. Also, some Republicans on the committee knew about this before the story publicly popped in the New Yorker, and that's in part why they were trying to sort of keep the confirmation process on track. And then, you know, oftentimes it's President Trump who does the big television sit down to try to diffuse a controversial issue or change the subject, or, you know, the president is sort of a media master at this. And this time it was Brett Kavanaugh last night with Fox's Martha McCallum. Extraordinary spectacle, because there's never been a case where a Supreme Court nominee who is facing confirmation has gone and done a television interview, and certainly not on this kind of subject.
Well, in addition to that, this is the first time I found out, at least within kind of a rough parameter of time, that when a Supreme Court nominee has lost his virginity. I mean, how far down
something
the rabbit
you were
hole
dying
we
to
here?
Know, right?
I do not want to know when Ruth Bader Ginsburg lost her virginity.
I'm going to let that one lie right there.
Yes, don't take the bait.
But I must say, you know, I mean, watch my colleague Martha McCallum ask Kavanaugh about Christine Ford's allegations, about Deborah Ramirez's, the one woman who surfaced in The New Yorker, and about Michael Avenatti claiming to have a woman, is going to make even more crazy, or I shouldn't say crazy, but allegations about the judge. Some of the critics of Fox saying, oh, this is going to be a total softball interview, and it was anything but. She asked him a lot of hard questions, and he was scripted at times, tried to stick to his talking points, but also was vociferous, I think, in saying that these things did not happen.
But do you think he was effective, and do you think he was believable?
I think it was a smart move on the part of the White House to put him out there, because while, you know, he's sort of been under the cone of silence and just putting out these statements so people get to see him sitting there with his wife. We have not heard, at least on camera yet, we'll see if Christine Ford testifies from either of these two women. Believable sort of depends on where you sit. I think most conservatives look at this and see it as a Democratic smear, especially with this latest case. I think most liberals want to believe that these things happen. So I think if a poll came out today, I think you'd see the country was split.
Yeah, well, probably so. And Mitch McConnell on offense yesterday as well on the Senate floor, which is somewhat unusual for McConnell. But the thing with Kavanaugh, regardless of whether you think he's credible or not, based largely on your political persuasion, I would say Democrat senators better bring their A game on Thursday if they want to rattle this guy.
I would say that that's true. I would also look at the other side and say, obviously, with 11 Republican men, male members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, they are going to have to be cautious in questioning Christine Ford if indeed this hearing comes off on Thursday. But at the same time, you know, she should be pressed on her claims because, again, where are the eyewitnesses? Where is the corroboration? You know, it's one of the fascinating things. I write a lot in Media Madness about President Trump often defying his aides and making, you know, incendiary charges on Twitter or saying things that set off these firestorms. And his aides have a term for it. It's called defiance disorder. In this particular case with Kavanaugh, he hasn't really done much defiance. There was the one tweet, which brought a lot of media criticism, where the president said, well, if this was as bad as Christine Ford says, why didn't she report it when she was 15? Obviously, a lot of women decide it's a very personal decision not to report sexual assault, you know, again, if this happened. But the president has been unusually disciplined. Even some in the media who are not big fans of the president are having to acknowledge that he has been careful and restrained in his commentary on all this.
And then you have the goofy Stormy Daniels lawyer, Michael Avenatti's claim that there's evidence about an alleged gang rape. What do you know about that?
I know what I've read Avenatti popping off on Twitter about, and I always feel like I don't even think anything Avenatti says should be covered until and unless he produces somebody with a name and a face who wants to make these allegations, and then journalists should be skeptical and investigate them. He has a habit of teasing, you know, I've got a CD, it's got all kinds of stuff on it, and then he doesn't deliver. And obviously, he wants to run for president. He's a huge partisan. The guy has been on television every 10 minutes since he got into the Stormy case. So a little caution, folks.
I would, second that emotion for sure. And just sticking on the topic, since this is the space in which you're an expert, I mean, how slimy is the D.C. press corps? The New Yorker piece is one thing. The Daily Beast yesterday, there might be as many as four accusers of Kavanaugh, just trying to kind of further the story and pile up the numbers. When the third was refuted by local law enforcement in Maryland, they're not investigating any additional claim against Kavanaugh. No report has been made, and no name has surfaced. And then the fourth is what we were just referencing, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' primordial attorney bloviating on Twitter, and that's enough for a news outlet to report, you know, we're up to four.
Well, I would never write such a story, and at the same time, I think some in the Washington Press Corps have shown some restraint when it comes to these very sensitive and yet unproven allegations. And then, as I say, the New Yorker piece, I just didn't, it's hard for me to see, given the holes that are acknowledged in the piece itself and the fact that some of the people who were named by this new woman, Deborah Ramirez, as being at the party, said they don't see anything, they don't recall anything. So it seems to me to be unproven. But I will say this, and that is, I think this has the potential to backfire if there's a lot of media coverage about every accuser who comes forward, regardless of complete lack of substantiation. It's going to fuel Republican charges that this is a coordinated smear attempt. And when we just had Christine Ford, it was, you know, seemingly one potential problem for a guy who's had a pretty stellar career in Brett Kavanaugh. But now that other women are coming forward, and I would never say that women who believe they have been wrong should come forward, but I think it's all getting conflated into one big story, and if the stories that are potentially more serious get thrown in with the Avenatti stuff, I think it hurts the cause of those who want to defeat the nomination.
He is Howard Kurtz. He's host of Media Buzz on Fox News, author of the book Media Madness, Donald Trump, the Press, and the War Over the Truth. Howard, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to talk to you guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're coming to you live from Judson University in Elgin this morning. And
in case you're a student here, they have free donuts here.
Yeah. I don't know that they have free donuts regularly, but I think
today, yeah, any student that comes by here at Judson University can get a free cup of coffee and some donuts.
Donuts.
And because this is a small Christian university, we're obviously spending our entire show talking about things that appeal to prurient interests.
Exactly.
Sexual innuendo and terms that you don't want to define and salacious allegations.
Boofing.
That would be a
good example. Well, boofing, it actually means keeping your kayak tip above the water.
I don't think that's what it means in this context, the Kavanaugh
that's
context.
That's what a professor told me here at Judson University. No, it's a technical term for kayaking.
I think that professor just didn't think you were ready to hear the other meaning. I didn't think he thought you were mature enough that you could take it. All right, so Brett Kavanaugh and his wife sat down with Martha McCallum yesterday, and I'm sure many in our listening audience watched. And I'd be interested in your take on how Kavanaugh came across and what you think that portends for Thursday, assuming the hearing goes on as scheduled, featuring both Blasey Ford as well as Kavanaugh. Because it seems to me he almost was still a little bit shell-shocked from the allegations.
Oh, yeah. It tears on your soul when people try to rip your credibility.
I think that there are people that are questioning whether or not Kavanaugh could do it. I think because they're not really thinking through exactly who the left is and the depths there to which they are willing to sink. The idea that, hey, look, if that was me, that would never happen to me because I've never done anything like that. And it's hard to wrap your mind around the concept that it doesn't matter if you've ever done anything like that. And it doesn't matter what the truth of these allegations is to the left. This is about power politics, identity politics, as the wrapper on power politics to stop Kavanaugh, to protect 50 years, to try and protect at least at minimum 50 years of cultural Marxist victories at the Supreme Court level that could not be obtained at the legislative level. And also, assuming that you can't do those two things, at minimum, midterm turnout to take back the House, maybe have a chance to take back the Senate, to impeach Trump, defang this administration, and restore left-wing order to D.C. That's what this is about. So Kavanaugh and the accusers are bit players in this leftist drama. And I think if you don't understand that, you have a very difficult time assimilating the grotesqueness that you see displayed before you. And it continued last night with Kavanaugh basically saying, look, all I want is an opportunity to respond.
I am looking for a fair process, a process where I can defend my integrity and clear my name. And all I'm asking for is fairness and that I be heard in this process.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Kavanaugh responded to McCallum's specific question on the Blase Ford allegations in detail.
No, I've never sexually assaulted anyone, not in high school, not ever. I've always treated women with dignity and respect. Listen to the people who've known me best through my whole life. The women who've known me since high school, the 65 who overnight signed a letter from high school saying I always treated them with dignity and respect.
But with regard to Christine Ford, do you know her?
I may have met her. We did not travel in the same social circles. She was not a friend, not someone I knew.
You don't remember ever being at parties with her, ever?
I do not. And this is an allegation about a party in the summer of 1982 at a house near Connecticut Avenue and East-West Highway with five people present. I was never at any such party. The other people who are alleged to be present have said they do not remember any such party. A woman who was present, another woman who was present, who is Dr. Ford's lifelong friend,
Leland,
has said she doesn't know me and never remembers being at a party with me at any time in her life. All I'm asking for is a fair process where I can be heard.
And he produced his Snoopy calendar from 1982 to prove that that party wasn't on his calendar.
Well, actually, he is going to bring a calendar. They have to submit evidence by 9 a.m. our time. Both sides have to submit anything that they have, any physical evidence that they have to prove where they might have been during that time period that she claims that he was at this party.
Right. He is also going to produce his Steve Austin action figure in its original packaging to enter into evidence just as an example, an exhibit of what he was doing during his high school years when he was alleged to be assaulting women. I mean, and that's where this interview, I mean, this has got to such a bizarre place. Are we really here? Well, are we really here talking about when a nominee for Supreme Court, or anybody, frankly, when they lost their virginity?
I did not have sexual intercourse or anything close to sexual intercourse in high school or for many years thereafter. And the girls from the schools I went to and I were friends.
So you're saying that all through all these years that are in question, you were a virgin?
That's correct.
Never had sexual intercourse with anyone in high school?
Correct.
And through what years in college, since we're probing into your personal
life?
Many years after.
I'll leave it at that. Many years after.
And she didn't do the follow-ups. And who was your first? Thank goodness.
I mean, it's just...
Oh, I know. It's so bizarre.
It's amazing. I mean,
it's the world we live in, though.
I picture him like Anthony Michael Hall in Weird Science with a bra wrapped on his head, talking, answering these questions. I mean... You know, the idea that you're going to turn the 40-year-old virgin into Harvey Weinstein shows you how talented the left thinks they are and how gullible they think you are.
He was compassionate about, you know, Christine Ford a little bit, saying that, yeah, maybe something happened to her, but it was not me.
I am not questioning and have not questioned that perhaps Dr. Ford at some point in her life was sexually assaulted by someone in some place. But what I know is I've never sexually assaulted anyone in high school or at any time.
So when she says there's no doubt in her mind that it was you, because she was asked that, is it possible that you maybe confused him, maybe it's mistaken identity, maybe it was someone else? She said, absolutely not.
I've never sexually assaulted anyone. I was not at the party described. I was not anywhere at any place resembling that in the summer of 1982. The other people alleged to be there don't say anything like that. And the woman who's alleged to be there, who's her friend, says that she doesn't know me and doesn't recall ever being at a party with me in her life.
I mean, I feel like this interview should take place in a principal's office. This is just remarkable. Kavanaugh also addressed the question of drinking because the New York Times and other outlets are pouring over high school yearbooks.
Well, they're painting him as a bad boy beer guy. It's so ridiculous. Him and his friends.
Yeah, the Georgetown Prep High School featured lots of football and beach parties with heavy drinking.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you ever been blackout drunk such that you never remembered anything, Brett Kavanaugh?
Were there times when perhaps you drank so much? Was there ever a time that you drank so much that you couldn't remember what happened the night before?
No. That never happened.
You never said to anyone, I don't remember anything about last night?
No. That did not happen.
Did you ever have any sense that any kind of the description of the behavior that I just described with these, you know, women being taken into rooms and raped or having sex with a number of men, consensual or otherwise, that was going on at the parties that you were at?
I never saw any such thing. Any such thing. I certainly never participated in any such thing, but I never saw or heard of any such thing.
Meanwhile, half of Congress would have to respond to the question. Yes, I have been that drunk that I don't remember anything that happened. I call it Wednesday. It is remarkable. Here's the other thing that, like, the scum like Avenatti and some of these other smear mongers on the left do. They make allegations so over the top and salacious, the gang rape allegations and all this other stuff.
Allegedly going to come out today or tomorrow, this alleged victim.
All this stuff that's floating around. If you make it, you know, we start here and then we have to go over the top. And so CNN reports one thing and Rachel Maddow's producers say, well, CNN said this, so we're going to have to beat that by being even more hysterical, hyperventilating, more coming up with allegations that are even more outrageous and that even do greater to shock the conscience. That's what this is. It's like a contest because then all we talk about is the severity of the allegations or the unbelievable nature of the allegations rather than the fact that there's no corroboration for a single word that has been said.
And meanwhile, they have two young kids and they have to explain this to them. And it is disheartening. And here's Ashley Kavanaugh.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult to have these conversations with your children, which we've had to have, some broader terms for our youngest. But they know Brett, and they know the truth. And we told them at the very beginning of this process, this will be not fun sometimes. You're going to hear things that people feel strongly, and you need to know that, and just remember, you know your dad.
Take a couple of your calls. Annie on the north side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I believe him 100%. I think this is ridiculous. It's a move to try and, you know, not vote until after the midterm. And I agree with you, Dan. The left is very dangerous, and Americans need to wake up. They'll do anything to ruin our way of life. They're a miserable group of people, and they're an evil group of people. And they'll do anything to ruin America, and that's what they're doing right now. And I think good people need to stand up. The Republicans need to get a backbone and start, you know, fighting this. And this is all about Trump because he won the election. That's what it's all about because they hate him. Thanks
for the call, Annie. Appreciate it. Mitch McConnell showed a little backbone yesterday, which was nice to see. Mm-hmm. You don't always see it.
He has one.
Candace in DuPage.
Good morning. I think, you guys, I have a few comments. This is a little bit about Title IX as well, because, you know, they lost that, and now they're trying to do that to the public, which is, you know, we don't need due process. We have to believe everybody. Mm. But I was a little bit disappointed in Martha's interview because did you see that one part, Amy and Dan, like where she goes, she repeated the question three times. She kept saying to him, and I thought it was kind of like insinuating something, and he was uncomfortable with it. She said, what exactly do you think this is all about? Do you remember that part of the interview?
Yeah,
oh, I do.
So
I didn't like it.
Well, but I think that was, and this was throughout the interview, Kavanaugh was very disciplined to not
fall for the bait, really.
To not respond to questions about people's motives. What is this all about? Why is this person saying this? I don't know. Here's what I know. He just stuck to he stuck to what he knows, and what he knows to be true, and what other people have said and done on his behalf. The 87 women who had a press conference on Friday, all the high school classmates who signed a letter of support. He just kept it there because if you start to comment on people's motives, then that becomes the headline.
Yeah, he did really well. I really like him. Thank you.
And he said fair process about 20 times, which is true, which he was measured, and he was, I thought he was perfect, and this might be a preview of what we're going to see on Thursday.
Margo in Burr Ridge.
Yeah, I thought it was a juxtaposition of what they've done to him and how he still remained a gentleman when she asked him specifically, well, when did you lose your virginity? And he was not one to kiss and tell, because, of course, the next question was, and who was that? You know, he's protecting whoever that person was, and yet his private life has not been protected at all. It's been made up and sullied. Anyway, I just thought it was very interesting that the left never seems to have any regard for people's privacy.
Yeah, thanks for ironically, right, when they wave the flag of privacy all around. Thanks for the call, Margo. I look forward to Thursday's hearing when maybe we'll find out when Chuck Grassley lost his virginity.
And speaking of virginity, you guys don't need to email me and tell me about how you lost your virginity. I don't need to know this. Some listeners have been emailing me, and I'm okay.
On the other hand, I would like to know, so please email me. Dan and Amy coming to you live from Judson University.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, live from Judson University this morning. Real quick, Bob in Waukegan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, I just want to let you know, I'm the other Bob from Waukegan. I'm a Gold Star dad. But I've also been accused of being a pile. The young lady that accused me just shouted out in my neighborhood. It was put on Facebook. And when I visited my school that I'm associated with through being a deacon, the principal had to call me in and said, hey, what's this all about? And I was flabbergasted. The problem being is no matter how much they prove me not guilty, there are other people in the world that are always going to look askance at you, no matter what you do. And it's innocent, and everything that you've proven to be and what it all is all about, it's a pale that comes over you, people, when they see you.
And what? How did your case resolve itself, or did it?
I was investigated through the Archdiocese of Chicago. They called up all my friends. They called up the person that was accusing me, and the person that accused me refused to give any kind of statement. And oh, so it was dropped. There was no person or no a person who they said who I had any kind of relationships with or whatever. No one can prove anything.
And now you're in Ray Donovan's position, right? Reagan's former labor secretary after he was acquitted on federal corruption charges. Where did I go to get my reputation back?
Yeah.
Bob, thanks so much for the call. Sorry that happened to you. And by the way,
it's traumatic, too, when you're wrongly accused of something and only, you know, compiled with the fact that the accuser won't come forward anymore and testify.
By the way, Bob, Gold Star father, so thank you for your child's sacrifice for our country. In addition to that, this does happen. I mean, forget the Duke Lacrosse case?
Right. Remember what happened to you, that crazy lady who claimed something against you? I mean, people just say things for no reason, just to be vindictive, or some people might be suffering from mental illness.
Right.
These people that are coming forward with false accusations for a political agenda, they make it harder for the real victims out there. Because I'll tell you one thing, if I was sexually assaulted and I could face my accuser, I would walk from California to Washington, D.C. to get there.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're coming to you live from Judson University in Elgin.
I think the entire soccer team is here, by the way.
Oh, nice.
They're here for the free donuts and coffee.
I don't know. I have the heart to break it to him that soccer's not a sport.
Oh, we used to. Please attack.
I have a long-standing relationship with Judge University because I'm a pillar of the community.
Oh my gosh.
And so I've participated in the World Leaders Forum that Judge University puts on, which is great. I think it's been something that's really put them kind of on the map in terms of intellectual circles in Chicago, bringing in world leaders. There was a great... actually have debates here, debate with between Newt Gingrich and Howard Dean that I sort of moderated this past year, which was a lot of fun. And we're pleased to be joined by Judson University President Gene Kroom for more on these topics, including here at Judson University, they actually celebrate the United States Constitution like the Constitution Day and have programming around that. What a remarkable insight that you have, Gene.
Yeah, it is. Any institution that accepts federal money is supposed to do something to express the meaning of the Constitution. Many institutions do that very thinly, but we take it very seriously as part of our learning for our students, and we dedicate one of our chapel days to Constitution Day.
A number of law schools just tweet out, hey, it's Constitution Day.
You'll see a lot of social media, and that'll be about the extent of it.
Same thing at Justice. They just tweeted, hey, it's Constitution Day, but we're not paying attention to it. It's sort of the same thing that happens there. And a part of the programming is our friend Eric Metaxas, who's joining us at the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. He's going to be on campus today.
He will. He'll be speaking to our students today, some community leaders. He has a community event at one of our church partners in the area, and then he will be our chapel speaker tomorrow.
And did he require that everybody read all 500 pages of his book on Martin Luther prior to his appearance?
He required that everybody read every one of his books before he spoke to make sure, the audience.
Some easy reading.
Yeah, it was fully prepared, probably 10,000 pages maybe.
The very distinguished Bonhoeffer from Wilberforce from Martin Luther.
Boy, right.
That should be. This is the kind of discussion you get, not at Iowa, at
Judson
University.
Now, you are a doctor.
I am a doctor.
But Dan is refusing to call you that. So tell us the story about your father.
Yeah, so when I earned my doctoral degree, my dad would introduce me and say, this is my son. He's Dr. Kroom, but he's the kind of doctor that can't help anybody.
That's perfect. I love it. Your dad is a man after my own heart. Exactly right. No offense, but I mean, let's just, with all these doctors.
I've never had to use it on an airplane. We need a doctor. I'm a doctor. And,
right. So
here's a quiz.
What did you write your dissertation?
That's right. Here's your quiz.
What's your doctorate in?
I have a PhD in education.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what did you write your dissertation?
What are you going to use that for?
What was the premise of your dissertation?
What's that?
What was your dissertation
Actually,
about?
My dissertation was on visionary leadership.
Okay.
So it was something I think that was very practical and something that could be applied for the rest of my career. And so it was an area of research that I enjoyed immensely.
And you come to Judson University by way of other experiences and leadership positions at the collegiate level, including Western Kentucky, the Hilltoppers. Mm-hmm. I know all Division I nicknames.
Yes, you do.
And so how Judson University, a small Christian liberal arts school, how is it different from some of your previous experiences, and how does that kind of separate itself here in the region?
Well, one of the advantages of being at a smaller institution like Judson is, as I share with our students, good news and bad news. Good news is, as a student, you're going to be known here. Bad news is, as a student, you're going to be known here.
Right.
There's nowhere to get lost. We're going to be involved in your life, and that's part of the fun. Yeah, I still teach a class each semester. I've got five or six of my students in class with me today, and the nice thing is you get to know your faculty, your staff, and your students really, really well. So that is a tremendous advantage. The other advantage is when we have events like this, Eric Metaxas, when Newt Gingrich and Howard Dean were here, there's more intimacy in how they connect with the audience, how they connect with the campus community. So it just brings a different level of learning because the students and the faculty are more involved in what's taking place.
Now, you said student enrollment is average for this year, the number of students that you have, but you're competing against other universities to try and get students from Illinois high schools. And tell us what the difficulty it is with that.
Well, there's a couple of challenges that we face in Illinois. One is that the number of high school graduates will continue to decline meaningfully between now and 2035. The other part, for five consecutive years now, we've had more people moving out of the state than into the state. And a sizable number of those people moving out of the state are families. And then you just can drive around Chicagoland and look at the billboards and see universities from contiguous states and from states from universities two or three states away. There's a lot of competition for the students in this marketplace. So you have to diversify your student portfolio. We've got a great group of traditional students. We also have a campus in Rockford. We partner with the Y Our campus is located in their facility. They help provide child care for our students that attend that. That's an adult population. We have a robust graduate program, so you have to have different streams of student engagement to be a small private institution like Judson to be successful.
Have you thought about trailering this place and going to Northwest Indiana or Pleasant Prairie? Is that too involved?
No, our home is in Elgin. This is where we are. This is where we live. So
it's a gorgeous campus.
It is. Thank you. 90 acres on the Fox River, Tyler Creek. It's a great location.
And also, too, I mean, just the Christian liberal arts piece of it, too. I mean, I grew up in Wheaton, so I'm very familiar with Wheaton College. 7-time attendee to the Crusader basketball camp when they were allowed to be called the Crusaders.
Yeah, your jump shot is fantastic.
So really, the importance of that for the surrounding community, but also how much that attracts students. I think my sense is at the high school level and at the collegiate level, there is more of a yearning for that because of what's happening at so many college campuses. And we've talked to our friend Everett Piper at Oklahoma Wesleyan about this topic as well, and he seems to agree.
Yes. We lead with our faith. I mean, we're very clear and distinct in our identity and who we are. We don't compromise that. That's what makes us distinct in the marketplace is our faith identity. The other part of the faith identity piece is that we're a very values-based institution. So we just do things differently. We don't have a student discipline process. We have a redemptive process where we talk about if somebody stubs their toe, makes a mistake, what does it look like to bounce back from that? That should be as important as what did you learn from the experience. So it's not punitive. It's about helping the student grow. And I'm one of those weird individuals in higher ed. I've been at 2-year schools and 4-year schools. I've been in high reputation schools, low reputation schools, public and private. So I've kind of covered the waterfront. It's just a different community at an institution like Judson, where we take care of each other and we take things very seriously, but we also have a lot of fellowship and good time.
That's interesting. I mean, the idea of like picking up, I mean, it's a small enough community where you pick people up when they fall down rather than just sort of, isolate them.
Yeah, it is. There are some, there are times if you're at a state institution where I have been, where if there's a student disciplinary issue, the student's kicked out of school. There's no question to ask. I mean, it's just what the procedures tell you to do, and oftentimes what the legal counsel is. And we go through a more laborious process than that. So it's about helping that person become stronger and more whole on the other side of it. That's very important.
I like that a lot because I think one of the things that's lacking in education generally is judgment calls.
Yeah.
Judgment calls that are values-based as opposed to, we have this handbook of policies
right.
and Character procedures and we're going to force-feed every potential fact pattern into these policies and procedures.
Correct. We may go off script, but we'll never go away from our identity. And our identity is to care for each other. That's what our faith community does. And so it requires a lot more work, requires a lot more energy, but frankly, it's much more rewarding. I mentioned my dad earlier. My mom was also a school teacher, and they were the type of educators that back in the day you could actually hug your students without any fear of retribution or misinterpretation of what that caring for your student meant or looked like. And so we hope to emulate that here at Judson.
Now, in the past 5 years, it seems as if college students have been in control and taking over the professors and deciding what kind of curriculum they want and if they want grades or not. That will never happen here, right? We still have adults in the room.
Well, we do. I'm sure there are plenty of people on campus question whether their president's an adult, but hey, have a good time. I think part of that for us is really because we work with respect for our students, and they respect who we are as an institution, and we root our conversations, our engagement around that. And so when you give students a voice, and you give them a leadership role, but you also make it very clear that there is a board of trustees, there is an administration, there are faculty. We all want to serve their interests and speak meaningful in their lives, and here's where your voice is in that conversation. You can create a really positive culture. I think at times, when you look at higher education, at least in the United States, when you tend to let everyone say whatever they want to say, which that's the difference between freedom of speech and trying to control a situation, which is what I think you're bringing up, you have to draw some lines and go, that's just not who we are, and that's not what we're going to do. So, yeah, we would do it differently than many other institutions would do it.
Well, I mean, and again, testament to the redemptive culture here is allowing Amy on campus with her checkered pass. So, I mean, it's inspiring, really.
And you let Episcopalians in, obviously, because I'm here.
Yeah.
We're very ecumenical.
Yes, very. For people interested in finding out more information about Jets University or the recruitment that you do of students, where do they go?
Best place to start is on our website, www.judsonu.edu. Molly Smith, our director of admissions, is here. She's a great person to get in contact with. We have a huge social media presence. You can engage any of us on social media. I get direct messages on my Twitter feed from our students. I am one of those unique college presidents that I give out my cell phone number to all prospective families and students. My class, my students have it. So we're very accessible. It's not hard to find us and track us down, but just Google Judson University, and we'll be happy to serve you. And I've got a good number of students here this morning, so it's very exciting that we're the type of community that we are, and we invite anyone to take a look.
Yeah, it's a great environment and some great programming that extends beyond the campus, including that World Leaders Forum that I mentioned. He is Gene Kroom. He's the president of Judson University, and who are our gracious hosts this morning. Thanks so much for hosting us and for joining us.
Thanks. Welcome back, Amy.
Appreciate
Welcome
it.
To Judson.
Thank
Glad you're here. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Dan and Amy coming to you live from Judson U.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
They got the beat, the campus beat, the campus beat. Yeah, the campus beat.
Dan and Amy, and we're on the campus of Judson University in Elgin this morning, and so an opportune time to provide another installment of Campus Beat. So compare Judson University and what you just heard from Gene Kroom, the university's president, to what's happening at the marquee names when you consider your child's education for Peyton and Eli there, Amy.
Yeah.
At Cornell, great Ivy League school, Cornell University, student ambassadors given an orientation packet that told them if they were privileged or oppressed.
What?
You're at Cornell.
Right.
That's your tip-off.
Yeah.
It contains a sheet of categories labeling certain groups as having privilege and other groups as being oppressed. If you speak accented English, you're marginalized or oppressed compared to proper English speakers who are privileged, for example.
Well, that is so ridiculous.
You think that's ridiculous? How about anti-Semitism? University of Michigan, great Big Ten school. Mm-hmm. Mitch Albom, of all people, Tuesdays with Maury. And
oh, I love him. I used to work with him.
You should tell him to stop plagiarizing other people.
What do you mean?
Yeah, he got whacked for plagiarism. More recently. He writes in the Detroit Free Press about a Michigan student who wanted to study abroad, take a semester and study abroad, asked for a recommendation letter from one of her professors.
Yeah.
Of course, he was willing to do it. Then that changed when she told him that she wanted to study abroad in Israel. No recommendation letter. As you know, many university departments have pledged an academic boycott against Israel in support of Palestinians living in Palestine.
Oh, really? This is it just in? Okay.
John Cheney Lippold, who teaches internet and cultural studies. The boycott includes writing letters of recommendations for students planning to study there. For reasons of these politics, I must rescind my offer to write you a letter of recommendation to study overseas in Israel. Anti-Semitism dressed up as, you know, high-minded, intellectual thought from these respected academics like John Cheney Lippold, are they?
I know they have the largest population of Middle Easterners in Detroit and Dearborn Heights and that whole area, but that is
Michigan,
discrimination right there.
Yeah, Michigan draws from a much wider universe than locally. I mean, distinguish this clown from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez if you can.
But I'm sure he's tenured, so he's not going to lose his job, right?
Then Minnesota State University at Moorhead, they hosted Brooklyn author Anastasia Higginbotham to feature her new children's book, Not My Idea, a book about whiteness, which features Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick is the new avatar to battle racism in America. That's what's happening on campuses not named Judson University.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're coming to you live from Judson University in Elgin this morning. And Amy,
you got yourself a nice little sweatshirt there.
I did. Judson University, nice swag there.
Judson nice Eagles.
Fly the colors or wear the colors, as the case may be. So turns out Bill Cosby is like school during a fire drill. No class. Yeah, man. All right, man. Yeah, man.
Poop-bop.
That's my best Russell. Well, that's the Cosby Show. That's like Fat Albert.
No, that's not.
I mean, it's so difficult dealing with the pop culturally illiterate.
Well, he's best known. I mean, obviously, he's America's favorite dad, or he was.
Yeah, past tense.
And he loved Jell-O, and he loved pudding.
Now you will get ready for the Zim Zam and the Babbity Bibbity, and you will take off your clothes like voo and voo. Get
that
ready
is,
for the most splendiferous pudding pop you have ever seen.
Yeah, that is, I believe that is Family Guy imitating Bill Cosby on Fat Albert. But anyway, he began his sentencing hearing, which goes into today, yesterday.
Yeah, and prosecutors want him to spend 5 to 10 years in prison. Of course, the defense team is begging the judge. They're saying he's old. He's 81 years old. He shouldn't be in prison because it's dangerous. And do you know he's blind? Did you know that?
On again, off again.
On again, off again. Temporary blindness. But, yeah, they're asking for home confinement. 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment.
You know,
what do you think?
Well, it's just interesting about this case. So Andrew Sullivan has a really good piece in New York Magazine. Andrew Sullivan, leading gay rights activist for a long time. He does write thought-provoking pieces. He talks about America, land of brutal binaries, and he's talking about this in the context of Kavanaugh and our politics. He writes about the tribalism that is consuming America, the direct result of identity politics. In tribal warfare, there are no degrees of tribal loyalty. It's Manichaean, and it's binary. And so a movement that began with the exposure of horrific sexual abuse of power swiftly expands to cover much less serious offenses. Start with the crimes and horrors of Harvey Weinstein and end with the firing of Ian Buruma, who's the editor of the New York Review of Books, for publishing a controversial essay. So Cosby, Weinstein, these were predators.
Right.
This is the Me Too movement at its best.
And this is the first person that could go to jail during this whole Me Too era that
right.
we live in.
And so this is why the Me Too movement is neither like unqualified good or unqualified bad, in my view. It is case specific. And so with respect to coming and encouraging women to come out against being preyed upon by Cosby or Weinstein, good. The power should not absolve them, and their leftism shouldn't provide license for them to behave like the cretins and criminals that they did. And now Bill Cosby is a convicted felon.
And the thing that doesn't sit well with me is that he has showed absolutely no remorse about this.
But well, okay, fine.
Because he thinks what he did, that it was consensual, that they wanted quaaludes.
So Cosby and Weinstein, though, belong in a category distinct from somebody who publishes, and these are, include men of the left, actors who said an untoward word, made an off-color joke, someone who leered at me, New York Review of Books editor who publishes a controversial essay. And all of these distinctions get lost because of the binary nature of our politics. And that's the point that Sullivan makes, and I think he's spot on, and I think it's dangerous because it flies in the face of reason, and it essentially suspends any semblance of interest in the truth. And so that's where we're at with Kavanaugh, and so. There's this inability to speak with moral clarity about distinctions between the likes of a Cosby and even the accusations only in allegation form against Kavanaugh.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though, this with this whole Me Too moment or in movement, they're trying to ring in Kavanaugh. I mean, I saw a Super PAC commercial that says Kavanaugh, Trump, and Roy Moore cut from the same cloth. Like, they're trying to just besmirch his reputation any way they can.
And you know what's interesting about this? Another case where the left cannibalizes its own. And so I guess when you're fueled only by hate and you invent menaces that don't actually exist, then you're going to consume erstwhile allies. So this story comes to us from Richmond, to the point. For those that are in full froth over Kavanaugh, be careful. Be careful. You step across the line just an inch, and you could be the next one felled, even if you're a man or woman of the left. For more than 20 years, Godfrey's Restaurant and Nightclub has been a prominent part of Richmond's LGBTQ scene, hosting drag shows, creating a hospitable environment for young people with alternative sexual identities, and participating in charitable fundraising events that transcend the LGBTQ community. The restaurant website describes its mission as a space where young people can come together in an environment that is inclusive and safe regardless of their sexuality or gender identity. We hope Godfrey's is that space. Okay? Mm. Sounds standard issue, right?
Yeah.
Despite that, Godfrey's recently ran afoul of LGBTQ militants at VCU, Virginia Commonwealth. The Rams.
I know all the You know all the Division I mascots.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so now LGBTQ, that community in the Richmond area, is being divided along racial, generational, gay, cisgender line. Listen to this. Godfrey's, they're questioning Godfrey's as to whether or not it can be considered a safe space for the LGBTQ community. Members of the community have begun discussing the local bar culture in general and what a queer, inclusive space could and should look like. Some people describe the scene as anti-queer. Numerous patrons say they have had bad experiences, traumatic stories, predatory behavior of cisgender males. They also don't like that the bathrooms don't have the correct terminology. People being policed for using bathrooms that align with their gender identity, anti-black incidents with drag performers, and so on and so forth. They've got a whole list of particulars. So now you have balkanization within this insular community because you're not deferential enough to my manufactured identity, and you haven't created a safe space that I demand, which, by the way, is the same thing that's happening on Capitol Hill, where you have Ms. Blasey Ford's attorney saying, well, wait a second. The Chuck Grassley Center said he was going to be respectful and it was going to be a safe environment. But then Mitch McConnell got up on the Senate floor yesterday and excoriated Democrats. That doesn't sound very safe. Safe space means you shall fold in. You shall agree. Enforced orthodoxy of opinion. Only cheerleading is allowed. This is what's happening, and so it just becomes like a King of the Hill contest, even within communities that are, that are just shades of gray apart from one another, like this case in Richmond.
Well, what about the demands that Blasey Ford's attorney made? She said she doesn't want her to testify under oath. They want one camera. They wanted her to go first. We know that is not going to happen. We know for sure that Ford is going to go first, and Kavanaugh is going to go second.
Yes, consistent.
So they're
with
still working these things out. And honestly, there's part of me that thinks she's never going to be here on Thursday.
Perhaps, but there is something sort of consistent with the idea of being able to confront your accuser, sort of a bedrock principle of American jurisprudence and our criminal justice system. But the other thing too is, just think about how remarkable this is. Blasey Ford, through her attorney, is saying, "Hey." She needs an unqualified safe space with no disagreement and no sniping, no partisan sniping. I mean, One Direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about Zayn and the boys. I mean, only the Democrats are allowed to do it. So that she can allege that Brett Kavanaugh tried to rape her and could have, she thought, accidentally kill her. She needs a safe space without qualification to allege that Brett Kavanaugh is a attempted rapist and attempted murderer or manslaughterer.
I mean, how remarkable is that? And because Mitch McConnell wants to point out facts that the names that she has provided to corroborate her story have, in fact, repudiated her story. Or certainly are not corroborating it. Right. You know, that is not being safe.
Oh, my gosh.
And tell me again how they're interested in the truth. Tell me again how these men and women of the left are interested in fair play. They couldn't be less interested in it. It has nothing to do with those things. They do not, I submit, they do not care about the veracity of the allegations against Kavanaugh. It is not about Kavanaugh. It's so much a bigger play. And these paid professional protesters that are shipped in,
you got arrested yesterday, and oh my God. And then protesters at Yale's law school, they filled the hallways. They didn't go to class.
It's just paid protesters of a different ilk. The paid pundits on MSNBC and CNBC.
But if they're law professors, shouldn't they know what the facts are, or at least care? She spent 6 hours jogging, 6 days trying to remember if it was Kavanaugh or not.
Prosecution of an ideology. Everything is subordinated to politics and the pursuit of power by any means necessary. That's what's happening here. And the truth is the first casualty. Ed, in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer, if I can manipulate my screen here. Ed,
yeah, you know, what bothers me, you don't know how this feels for the average guy out into the, like me out here, because we just see that this is a total disaster that's growing. But what kills me is, why isn't anyone questioning her sexual history? She sounds like she was pretty loose back in the day. And then another thing is, this is actually going to hurt future people to get involved, let's say, with the Supreme Court, if they know they're going to go back and look at things that happened 35-something years ago. If I was a Republican, and Dan, you played basketball or whatever you played, the offense wins the game. And you know what? The Republicans should start taking the offense and start going after her. So then next time, someone that brings up some phony allegations knows that, you know what? There's going to be some damage. There's going to be some punches thrown at you.
Thanks for the call.
I think defense wins the game.
Well,
okay. You do need offense.
Yeah, okay, buddy Ryan. Okay. I mean, here's the thing. You saw that yesterday. It's not going on offense against Blasé Ford. No. It's going on offense against this political culture and exposing the left for who they are and what they're attempting to do. That's the play, and that's sort of the play that McConnell made yesterday and certainly Kavanaugh did, and it should be exposed because, we talk about this all the time, like in the hyper-racial politics. Mm-hmm. I've never had an incident of a racial nature in my life, in my everyday life. I've never had an incident, you know, male-female about, like, you know, respect for the gender or whatever, all the demagoguery that you hear from sitting U.S. senators and legal representation for the accused and so forth.
But have you ever been wrongly accused of something?
Yeah, sure. But the point is that these conversations, the way they're happening inside the Beltway and on cable news shows, do you think most Americans recognize that? Do you think that's a part of most people's daily lives? They're interacting with, you know, men interacting with women and vice versa? I just don't think so. Just like the interactions on cable news channels over, you know, black versus white with respect to police or any other matter that involves race identity politics. I mean, it's just foreign to my everyday life. And I think that's the case with most people. Paul in St. Charles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey guys, good morning. I've been dying to call in on this subject for the last week or two, however long this thing's been brewing. This has really irritated the crap out of me. When is somebody like Project Veritas or some other investigatory type group going to start turning the tables and checking out the senators and the congressmen and going into all their old sexual past when they were 17 years old? It's time the tables get turned. Somebody step up and start doing that. Put the threat of it out there and then actually do it. Actually start calling all of these senators and congressmen into question, not only for their past, but for their current lives, which I'm sure there's lots of shenanigans going on in D.C. When the cat's away, the mice will play. That's I think something that should be done.
Thanks for the call, Paul. But do you really want to hear when DiFi lost her virginity?
No, I don't. We do have a little bit of breaking news. The White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders has just said on Good Morning America that the White House would be open to having Brett Kavanaugh's second accuser, Deborah Ramirez, testify on Thursday.
Sure. Why not?
Okay. Bring him on. I'm going to get my Michael Avenatti's.
Well, let's not get crazy,
but
you put up the tent, so you might as well allow everybody who wants to participate in the circus, so, you know, why not? Lori in Elmhurst, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Love your show.
Thank you.
So I had an experience in college, which happened 37 years ago. In my dorm room, guys from my brother's floor came, made a very inappropriate statement, had a knife. I got them out of my room. I remember every detail about that. I'm so offended. And I dealt with it. I went to the college. They were thrown out of school. I dealt with it then and there, and I moved on. I'm so offended by the fact that she does not remember anything. That's ludicrous to me. Ludicrous. This was 37 years ago. I remember the time. I remember what I had on. I remember their names. Everything.
Thanks for the call, Laura. I appreciate that
anecdote. You're okay.
Yeah. Dan and Amy coming to you live from Judson University.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11 right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're broadcasting live from Judson University in Elgin this morning. And
crowd is growing.
Pleased to have a featured speaker on campus, part of their Constitution Day program. He's New York Times bestselling author Eric Metaxas, the host of Socrates in the City, or Socrates for you Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure fans. great books on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, on William Wilberforce that was made into a movie, Amazing Grace. Martin Luther, you know, we're not going to go over all 95 theses today, but we'll touch on that. And a new book coming out, I think we almost have an exclusive on this, Showing His Range, Donald Drains the Swamp, which is a kid's book. Eric Metaxas, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So you finally wrote something I could read.
Well, let me tell you
something.
Yeah,
there you go.
First of all, look, I don't like sassy morning hosts, so you back it up, sister.
Yeah.
I've had enough.
Sister, you sound like Maisie Hirono.
Listen, seriously, please, no. Seriously, I've written 30 children's books.
Really?
Yes, and I've written for VeggieTales. Have you heard of VeggieTales?
Yes, I have
VeggieTales.
You eat
vegetables? Well, I have written for VeggieTales. I wrote... some people have heard of Lyle the Kindly Viking.
Yes.
I wrote the Hamlet Omelette parody. Yes, yes.
This is
and I'm
right.
The voice of the narrator on the Esther video, so I'm famous in the vegetable universe.
I'm waiting for the Hamlet Omelette parody to come to the Shakespeare Theater in Chicago so I can see it on stage.
I'm happy to do it, yeah. But I want to play Ophelia. But listen, that's too weird. No, I have to tell you, I've written a lot of children's books. People don't know. I mean, I'm confusing because I've written these biographies of mostly, Bonhoeffer, Luther, Wilberforce, but my new book is another children's book, but it's also a humor book, and it's called Donald Drains the Swamp. Simplest plot in the world. There's a caveman named Donald. He's kind of got this blondish hair.
Did you have anybody in mind that inspired the story?
Not offhand, right. No. And so Donald, he's a caveman, and the cave people, they've got a problem. The king lives in the middle of a swamp, and he never listens to them anymore. He's out of touch with the people he's supposed to represent. He only talks to the swamp creatures. And basically, the people say, we're frustrated. What do we do? So they go to this businessman named Donald. He's a builder of caves. And they say, Donald, can you help us? He goes, sure. Tomorrow I'll go down to the swamp. I'll see what's going on. So he goes down. He talks to the swamp creatures. And the first swamp creature he meets is a labiosaurus. don't laugh. It's very serious.
Yes.
And the labiosaurus says, you don't understand. The king only talks to people who live in the swamp. If you want to live in the swamp, you can live in the swamp. And Donald says, I don't want to live in the swamp. Thank you very much. He goes back and he says, we're going to have to get drastic. Sorry. We're going to have to get really drastic. They say, what are you talking about? He goes, we're going to have to drain the swamp. And he goes back the next day with a shovel, and he meets the biggest, baddest swamp creature of all. It's the Georgiosaurus.
Oh, I see what you did there.
This
you
is sort that? Of Flintstonian.
But oh, totally, sounds... totally. But he drains a swamp, and at the end they ask him if he wants to be the new king. And he says, no, you're a free people now. You don't want a king. You get to tell your leaders what to do. And they said, you mean like a president? And he goes, yeah, and if that's what you're looking for, I'm your caveman. And so it's a very, very happy, sweet book. It's fun for all ages.
it sounds like it. I hope you'll be marketing this on college campuses around the country. We just mentioned that.
I'm not even going to talk it on radio programs. I really won't.
Why?
It's just going to market itself. People are interested in a happy book. You know, these are such tough times. I mean, we don't even need to talk about Kavanaugh. It's been such a divisive time in our country. We need to laugh. We need to celebrate. We've got a president who's a bit of a caveman. But guess what? We hired him to drain the swamp. He's trying to do that. You know, like, it's ultimately, it's happy news. But we need to be able to laugh.
But we have to compete because, I mean, we just mentioned earlier in the show, there's a children's book author that's making her way around college campuses with Colin Kaepernick as the avatar to combat racism in America.
Good luck with that.
Well, I mean, I was just saying.
That sounds like a real cheerful read.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's mostly for the professor.
I think, I know. No, I think that we do have to laugh. I mean, again, I'm pretty eclectic. I've written a lot of humor. I wrote humor for, when I was in college, I was a Yale English major. By the way, I don't recommend Yale. People think, recommend it.
I hear it's a real party school.
It's kind of a, oh, that's funny.
The freshman dorms, I hear, are happening.
Let me tell you something. No kidding. It is, it's spiritually and politically, it's a very dark place. It's kind of like, you know, lockstep, politically correct, and which to me is a huge bummer. But I guess when I was there, I was the editor of the Humor magazine. So I've written a lot of humor, and something told me that things are so tough in this country right now. A funny book like Donald Drains the Swamp, that's kind of like what I was in the mood for. So,
well, we have to stick on Yale. My observation of Yale is, to borrow from Buckley, neither God nor man exists at Yale anymore.
Well, that's it's kind of true. When Buckley wrote that book, that was describing the Yale of the late 40s. Just imagine, we're talking about that long ago, Buckley saw it as a place that was anti-faith, anti-God, and effectively communist in terms of the, you know, not only the politics, but the economics and so on and so forth. He identified this, how many years ago is that? That's 70 years ago, and it's only gotten worse. I was there in the 80s. And it was, I mean, it was the place that I learned about political correctness.
Well,
it's
by any amazing. Chance, did you know Brett Kavanaugh or Deborah Rodriguez?
No,
were you groped by him?
Did
you go to a freshman party?
Are you guys shock jocks?
No, I'm
sorry. What is happening?
It's 8:30. We're about loopy.
Binge drinking?
You know, it's boofing, it's an interesting thing, because I actually said that when you hear about this, you think, a lot of people did stuff like that in college. Like, it just sounds like drunken, stupid. And if somebody did that to my daughter, I would find them and kill them with my bare hands, right? However, the idea that you come out of the weeds 30-something years later, that you don't tell anybody about this for 30-something years, and just as the person's about to be, you know, on the Supreme Court, you come out with this as though it's the most important thing in the world, I thought, that just stinks to high heaven. It just smells bad. And then I found out yesterday on my own radio program that this accuser, this woman, sat on the board. Listen to this. You cannot make this up. Sat on the board of a $160 billion company that produced one product, the abortion pill.
Right.
And I thought, are we making this? Is this a joke? It's not a joke. It's actually
true.
That's the woman that comes out of the weeds at the 11th hour to defeat this, to my mind, extraordinarily qualified man. It just doesn't seem right, and I think most Americans kind of get that. It's just so dark that we've descended to this. I mean, that we fight our political battles this way. This is not the way to do it.
Well, last night, Brett Kavanaugh and his wife Ashley broke their silence and spoke. Were you able to see any of it, and was he believable?
Yeah, I caught a little bit of it. Oh, there's no doubt that he's believable. I mean, this is the whole thing, is that when you really know the guy, and I've watched enough to get a sense of who he is, you don't get to be who he is without being who he really seems to be. In other words, it's not like some guy who comes out of nowhere and then this stuff comes out. It that just doesn't make sense. I mean, he has an extremely public record, and so this is about as low as we've gone in our politics, and I'm worried about our country, to be honest.
And it's remarkable too, I mean, to see 87 women hold a press conference for him on Friday. And all of the women going back to high school who have signed letters of support, and classmates who've signed letters of support. So, I mean, in terms of the manifest weight of the evidence, corroborating one story versus the other, pretty overwhelming.
Well, the reason I find it so cynical is because, as we all know, there are real women who have really suffered sexual abuse. And so to cynically trade on that, in order to defeat this guy. In other words, to trade on this, the Me Too movement and the kind of trend that we're feeling right now. This is a serious problem. And anybody who's experienced sex abuse knows it doesn't get more serious than that. So the idea that this is now the political weapon that we're using, it's really ugly. We've got to rise above this because we're going to take the whole nation down. Nobody's going
to
win.
I want to go back to the Ivy League since you're a graduate. And the irony of most of these Ivy League schools being founded as divinity schools.
Yeah. Yale was. In 1701, it was founded by people who expressly wanted to train up ministers to preach the gospel. I mean, it's an amazing thing that all of these institutions have gone as far in the other direction as you possibly could.
And so Penn Law Professor Amy Wax has suggested, told us on our show, that the Ivy League schools are, it's not recoverable. It would be better to close them down and start over.
I would totally agree. I would never want my kid to go to an Ivy League school. In fact, absolutely. You see, the thing is parents are fooled. Parents think, oh, it's Yale, it's Princeton. Let me tell you something. If you don't go in there as a missionary to change that culture, if you go in there with an open mind, you're dead because there is no room for conversation. You go onto those campuses, and unless you can hide away with a group of sane people who think as you do, you're going to get rolled. It's just like everybody drinks the Kool-Aid, and by the time you graduate, you have effectively thrown away all the values your parents probably raised you to believe in and paid a lot of money for you to go to school.
Well, and I say the exact same thing about my alma mater, Northwestern. People think, oh, I'm joking around, whatever. I'm not joking around. The idea of paying $250,000 to go to a totalitarian re-education center like Northwestern, like these Ivy League schools, is insane.
Well, first of all, we're not joking. Like, this is absolutely real. In other words, you're not exaggerating when you say totalitarian. I mean, you may be exaggerating when you say totalitarian, but the idea is that the thinking is the same. The ideas on which our country was founded, in which these schools were founded, the idea of open debate, believing in truth, having a conversation, they don't want to have a conversation. They've come up with what they think are the answers, and they just want to shut down conversation. So when you talk about sexuality, when you talk about any of those things, they don't want to know anything that might lead them to a more nuanced view. They want to shut down debate, and the way they do it is by demonizing their opponents, calling you a bigot or whatever it is. That's the climate, obviously, in the mainstream media, in places like New York City where I live. People in the heartland know this is wrong. People with common sense know that something is going on, and I really think, you know, to get back to my book, Donald Drains the Swamp, I feel like we have to, on some level, laugh, because you can't change common sense. A rooster will never lay an egg. So we can talk about transgender all we want, but most people who try to live their lives and make a buck and raise their kids, they know that there are certain things that you can't change, and they're tired of it. I think most of them are probably just, you know, turning off the TV.
Well, but then, so how would you, I mean, and by the way, over the last couple of days, two really good think pieces, one from different perspectives. Andrew Sullivan in New York Magazine, we were talking about Shelby Steele's piece over the weekend in the Wall Street Journal about the left having hate and nothing else to offer these days. So how do you combat that? You just laugh it off?
Well, I think it's a number of things. Part of it for me, again, I'm not kidding when I say that I wrote this book because I think we need to be lighthearted on one level about it. I mean, most people know that Donald Trump is not Hitler 2.0.
Right.
And so when people say that, what do you do but laugh? You could say, look, you might not like him, you might disagree with him, and you might have principled reasons for disagreeing with him, but when you go to the level of saying, we've got to invoke the 25th Amendment, we've got to impeach him, you think, my goodness, people have lost all perspective and all historical perspective because they're historically ignorant. If you have any sense of our history as a nation to make those kinds of claims, first you have to laugh at it and you have to mock the people who say these things. But then, of course, you do have to fight. I think that everybody has to vote in these midterms because our nation is genuinely at stake. I don't want to be a Cassandra, you know, I don't want to be a Chicken Little. I want to nonetheless tell people, look, this is unprecedented. When you have an election as we've had that is trying to be overturned by any means necessary, it's tantamount to a coup or to a civil war. You have to take it seriously. So I do laugh at it, but on the other hand, I take it very seriously because this is a great country. If we lose what we have here, there's nobody waiting in the wings with freedom and with the banner of liberty to take our place. I mean, there's China, there is a socialist Europe. We really to use Lincoln's phrase, are the last best hope. You know, we have to take that seriously. God has given us this platform, this nation, for his purposes in history. And there are people, poor people, people without liberty around the world who are looking to us. So I really do take it seriously.
So maybe you're not a Cassandra, not a Chicken Little, maybe a Diogenes, but looking for more than one honest man.
Oh, I like it. I love the fact that you brought up Diogenes.
Diogenes.
I just came back from Greece, so I
maybe that could be a spinoff of Socrates
in
the city.
Diogenes in the city.
Diogenes in the park, maybe.
That's kind of cynical. Diogenes in the city. Is there an honest man? Anybody?
Well, wrong city.
Yeah.
He is Eric Metaxas, best-selling author.
I'm speaking tonight at a church.
At Emmanuel Lutheran Church in East Dundee at 7 o'clock, and he'll be signing copies of your new book, Martin Luther.
Yes. Well, actually, I'm signing copies
crowd.
Of all of my books.
All of his books.
Martin Luther, the book just came out in paperback. I'll be signing copies. I'll sign copies of any book tonight, and I'll be there as long as people want to get a book signed. But that is in East Dundee, 7 o'clock, Emmanuel Lutheran Church. Please come.
It's a good time to talk about challenging papal authority. You could even get Catholics like me involved in that, right?
Oh, don't get me started. Holy cow.
For more information and to get tickets, you can go to 560theanswer.com/Luther. That's 560theanswer.com/Luther.
You should also pick up his books on Bonhoeffer and William Wilberforce while you're at it. And forthcoming book, when are we going to see Donald Drains the Swamp on Amazon?
Oh, like it's on there now.
Oh, it is.
Donald Drains the Swamp. Check it out. I mean, I also have a website. It's just go to google.com, and just kidding. It's ericmetaxas.com. But if you go to Google, you can find me there, Eric Metaxas.
What if we search at DuckDuckGo? Can we find you?
You could search at Bing. Do whatever you need to do, Eric Metaxas.
Eric Metaxas, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My joy.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.